KXSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. This is edition 277, and I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in. On the program this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with Damaris Baker, who is an artist and community activist based in Montreal. I got to know Damaris over the last years, mostly through community events and gatherings, that is both cultural events and demonstrations. And in the fall of 2024, when I launched a publication connected to this radio program called Free City Radio, of course, the publication looked at a series of interviews that I did with frontline community organizers and cultural workers in the context of the first pandemic lockdowns. And the publication is called Voices Beyond Lockdown. And I thought it would be interesting to share a few conversations with community members who participated in the event that launched this publication, and think of it as a way to extend the conversation, to continue to think critically about the important social, political, and economic lessons to be learned from the experience of the pandemic lockdowns, to think critically about mainstream narratives on the pandemic that really work to erase the grassroots organizing that took place. And I think this is important in terms of thinking about social movement history. So it's really a pleasure to have spoken with Damaris, to hear directly reflections on this time from an artist and community activist. So here is our conversation.
There's been a lot of important activist responses to the realities of the pandemic, and the ways that community activists really stepped up to deal with a lot of the intersecting points of crisis at that time. And obviously that carries over into the present. As part of Free City Radio Project, there has been this small publication that came together called Voices Beyond Lockdown, Collective Action and Care Across Borders in a Time of Crisis. This was released in the fall of 2024, and it included the participation of a bunch of cultural workers and community activists. And also folks in Montreal have been engaging with the voices that are highlighted in these interviews through this project. And I thought it would be interesting to pick up those conversations by engaging with some people who took the time to read those interviews and engage with the ideas that are in this publication. So Damaris, you generously came to the launch, and I also know that you're often taking the time to actually read through, whether it's activist books or zines, and you're in a lot of different community spaces. And generously, you agreed to share some reflections sort of in response to this publication. So maybe we could just first start, you brought these beautiful notes with different pen colors, and it looks wonderful. But maybe you could first start by introducing yourself and, yeah, just any sort of initial impressions in response to this project that you felt are important. I guess we could start there. Yeah.
So I'm Damaris, they, them, and I have worked in the past in radio. I'm an animator and a musician, and I've been involved in various different activist movements in other places in the world, in Australia where I've lived, and in Canada, just as a community member and as an artist. And I'm really appreciating the different voices that came across in this. You have Martin, who was speaking from the perspective of Indigenous people, speaking about COVID with no hospitals in the northern communities, the importance of the Native Friendship Centre and Resilience Montreal, and on the ground communities that support Indigenous people living outside of the reserves, and just taking that perspective, which I was aware of, but then other perspectives, Mohammed speaking from the Guinean community about warehouse workers, and just the sort of struggles. He said, I feel really sad that people are forced to go on a hunger strike to call for their rights and health to be respected. So, you know, if you're a mainstream person in Montreal who happens to have a house with room to look yeah. after your children, if you mm-hmm. happen to have the technology mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. do things, you're in a very different situation mm-hmm. to people who may be living in cramped quarters or working under temporary worker schemes and things. So these voices are particularly important and interesting for people to be aware that COVID impacted mm-hmm. on everyone, but it impacts differently, mm-hmm. very differently on people. So Zaid spoke about prisoners' rights, dangers of outbreaks in prisons, and just the right of prisoners to not have to live in conditions which are going to be challenging their health, the injustice of that, the fact that often there's no violent crime involved and they're basically there because of a carceral system which is very prejudiced and involves the racism against people of colour, immigrants, and all sorts of justice issues around prisoners' rights to start off with, let alone COVID issues.
I think often on that point, people forget sort of just that basic reality that there's this sort of cycle of economic violence that leads to incarceration. You pointed towards that.
Well, when I remember speaking to people and saying, like, is it 30% of people are actually waiting for their trials? They're basically not haven't even been found guilty of anything. They're just particularly mm-hmm. in there because they can't pay bail, or in there because they happen to be a community that's been sort of targeted and criminalized. And this issue, like, it comes up here as well, this issue of who is criminalized. Why have they been criminalized? What happens when you have been criminalized? And increasingly you're seeing protesters get criminalized, and then you have criminalization of people through not having particular papers or documents, which may be almost impossible to get from a government, even though you're working in the community. But this issue is one of the questions I put down afterwards. Who is criminalized? Who's presented as criminals? And what language does the right use to have us running in fear as they criminalize sections of the community that are resisting their particular agenda? But going a little bit off the track there, yeah, having Zaid speaking about that, he also said one of his biggest concerns and fears was that the largest benefactors would be corporations. The Liberal government is trying to bail out big corporations, to simply hand out public funds to corporations. And strangely enough, we saw a huge transfer of wealth during COVID from mm-hmm. the people to corporations. And that hasn't really been questioned as to why that was done during COVID and the impact of COVID. I feel that COVID was the beginning of the things that we're seeing now with the far right. The government control, which was necessary, but the actual impact on workers and on immigrants, mm-hmm. on incarcerated people, on Indigenous people, has been in many ways extremely negative, and mm-hmm. increasingly mm-hmm. it's just given more and more power to corporations to be criminalizing and pushing the agenda. And you see what's happening south of the border. Like, COVID was a preparation for that. They were watching very carefully what a government could do and get away with. If you run fear-based politics, you'll die unless we do this. We'll do this, from curfews and shutdowns. I know they were important, but
in terms of health, yeah.
Just looking at the impact on people, it's interesting to see that, like, COVID has had a huge impact on the way that governments treat its people around the world. So Sundar's talking about the connections with Iraq in countries where you've had a US invasion that impacted the healthcare system, mm-hmm. and on top of that, corruption, hospitals not having what they need, and then protests to try and look after people, protests against government. So, you know, what happens globally? You have people in Canada with family all around the world, and the global mm-hmm. implications of that. So having voices. Brian spoke about the impact of industrialization, Chernobyl, Fukushima, the toxins and pollution, and mining, Canada mining, the impact that has. He's looking very globally about Canada's impact on the world. He also said many people don't understand in Canada why other people are fleeing war and poverty and economic justice, even though our system here depends on it. Mm-hmm. And then Shanice, what does it mean to critique the state, but also realize people need the resources that the state mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. holding? So some of these some of these comments, and then Mustafa has so many wonderful comments that I had trouble finding quotes because there were so many good ones. He spoke, I just want to read all of his books. He spoke about pushing. I can't even find. He said, the pandemic illustrates an argument for a policy change. It's underlining the collective needs that are at play. Only through socialized policies can we actually deal with this moment, and by extension in the long term save ourselves as a species from environmental disaster. This is crazy to think about, because the unwavering logic claimed by the market is that the market is dynamic. Governments need to give the market space. It's a giant scam, a Ponzi scheme at the highest levels. Like, he talks brilliantly about the very global supply chains, the fact that many economies in the global south, this is quoting him, are dependent on remittances from migrant workers. So you may have a woman who's working as a carer in Canada sending 70% of her income back to the Philippines or whatever like that. And what does it mean when you have a COVID situation with the precarity of the work and her working conditions and the difficulty of what's happening, let alone her connection to things around the world. So I felt like these discussions, people sort of want to put COVID behind us because there's a vaccine and there's a vague sense of having a bit more control of things. But the fragility, the points of stress that were highlighted here for the most vulnerable people who are suffering injustices, structural injustices that have been created by the Canadian system, historically the racism, the settler colonial system, the impact on Indigenous people, the neglect, the impact on workers' rights, specifically immigrant workers' rights. If we don't highlight these things now and recognize these voices from COVID, then it's hard for us to push against Polyev's agenda against immigrants if we don't actually look at what's happened and recognize the wisdom and the integrity of the voices of people speaking about their experiences. So yeah, we all suffered in different ways, but the ways that people suffered who were really in these precarious positions, that like the death and the suffering and the absolute stress of how do I care for people around me was and still is huge. And having been able to articulate this in clear ways, I think is crucial to how we organize and work together to resist the wave of far-right politics that's pushing in the world against us.
Respect. And while you were speaking, Damaris, I also remembered, and this is actually not in the zine because it sort of, I think, was articulated a bit over time, and these were interviews that were done really between like March, April, May 2020. But one thing that I think also is maybe like lost in narratives now is the role that activism played, for example, in having mass vaccine access, right? I'm just thinking of that when you were speaking, like it wasn't clear at the beginning how that would happen, right? Like, would people have to pay? Also, like, sort of interventions at a global level to ensure distribution, which was not happening at equitably at the beginning. There was a lot of activism around that, right? And then also for governments to be forced to take into consideration, like, also like the realities of daily workers, right? Like, for example, the Mexican government was very criticized for like thinking only about the economy in relation to allowing people to circulate at the time when vaccines weren't fully rolled out. But it was this sort of contradictory space, because also the reality is that so many people are daily wage earners, right? And so activists, I think, rightly deepened a lot of policy conversations during the pandemic. And I don't know if there's enough credit given, is what I'm trying to highlight, to the role that like critiques and social movements played in how things transpired at the time. I don't know if that resonates with you at all.
Yeah, I think you know a lot more about this than I do, because you were involved in the activist stuff. But it would be good to actually, it would be really good to highlight the work that activists did, because I know there was a lot of work listening to people and then pushing for it. I mean, there was also a hoarding of vaccines and yes. a refusal to recognize that there was a global push in research, that money was given to big pharma to develop vaccines, but then the vaccines were hoarded for the 6 months next vaccine or all sorts of things. But yeah, I mean, people, workers were speaking out, frontline workers were speaking out about not being given proper the masks and yeah. care for them to be able to do resource work. I mean, I have a friend who, his father was sick. His mother's a migrant worker who was working in aged care. His father went to hospital, got COVID, brought it home, gave it to the family, then passed away. Wow. And so he was, you know, his mother was working in care. He was working from home, and he was unable to really grieve his father. I think they weren't allowed to invite family to the funeral. Wow. And so people, these stories which just kind of disappeared, and there wasn't really a public grieving or recognition mm-hmm. of the suffering and grief that people went through. You mm-hmm. weren't even able to publicly grieve mm-hmm. things. But recognition of what the activists actually were able to do and achieve in terms of responding to people saying, this is what we need to do. And this is what's coming out in these voices as well. There was arguments. You need to deal with prisoners' rights in terms of healthcare. We need to take care of people. We need mm-hmm. to really take care of people and recognise people's rights in terms of healthcare and being safe in the workplace. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think this is part of that. But I wish there was a conversation between the activism that was done then and what's happening now. It feels like people want to close the door on what happened during COVID. Because mm-hmm. even you mentioned before, it feels like a little time capsule. Why does it feel like a time capsule? Mm-hmm. COVID is still here. We have mm-hmm. a vaccine, but the impacts of what happened during COVID True. Are still being felt. And there should be a conversation between how did COVID change things? Mm-hmm. I mean, I did a little page here, which was my comment on things that are happening right now. So I had COVID, pandemic, global health crises. That's still there with us now, like fear of other pandemics. How do we care for people? Then you have climate change, mm-hmm. but rise of the far-right fascism, rise of corporate power, billionaires controlling trade and governments, AI technology in the service of empire, surveillance, military, social control, the genocide in Gaza and Palestine, legitimized by Western powers, the end of international law as we knew it in the past, because it's been so challenged. The ongoing criminalizing of immigrants while wars, genocides, resource neocolonialism creates refugees and climate change as well. This migration around the world for work and forced migration. Genocides destabilizing in relation to conflict minerals, the Green Revolution. We're talking here about Congo. DR Congo, and then the end of US dominance in terms of a rise of BRICS, sort of in terms of sort of the US dollar and the petrodollar, attacks on workers' rights, the imperial boomerang in terms of military police criminalizing poverty, dissent, Emi Cesera's idea of what is inflicted onto the colonial countries like Africa, the austerity that was enforced by the IMF on Africa in the 80s and 90s comes back to the US, and there's a stripping of public services and everything, which is exactly what has been done, was forced in using debt, and has been so sort of activists have pushed back against that so much, and it's like, oh, austerity comes to Europe, of course, but North America as well, and then Ukraine, Palestine, DR Congo, Lebanon, Syria, Tigray, Haiti, so areas of huge struggle and conflict around colonial and empire struggles. So this, it feels kind of exhausting to have all this happening, but I think using COVID, of course, using Palestine and various Islam, so many powerful ways which you can see exactly what the imperial forces are doing, but COVID highlighted a lot of those areas as well. Mm-hmm. You can learn a lot. Like a conversation with COVID and Palestine, actually, the struggles and the articulation of what people need and the lies and the complicity of governments in actually sort of trying to gather and solidify control against people. This would be a very interesting conversation to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like how you've done these sort of mind maps, and I'm thinking also about like how community experiences in a city like Montreal, Geogeage, Munyang, you're at a lot of different protests. I've seen you at these different demonstrations, and one thing that comes to my mind is also like, you know, a publication project like this, Voices Beyond Lockdown, is about like hearing a bunch of different people, but you're familiar with this, like when you're at a protest, all the topics that you just mentioned seem, you know, like there's a bunch of different connection points there. But in a protest, you could easily talk about all these things with the people that you're encountering, right? And for me, it sort of like highlights how like a social movement space is so important, right? Like in terms of like learning, in terms of like making those connections and like building an analysis, and also hopefully through that, what counter power looks like.
And this is interesting because I gathered a thing at the end. Oh, yes. Which was like a response to that I wanted to sort of say to people, which is, yes, it's complicated, but I would say three things. Since the 1600s and before, there's always been resistance to the violence of empire.
Yeah.
And all of us are complicit and also have resistance in our history. So you can find your history of resistance in your family, connect to it, and start unraveling your internalized white supremacy without getting stuck, like a rabbit in the spotlight. Like, find an area that's meaningful to you in terms of your family and your identity, and refusing this privilege of whiteness that just washes the way the resistance of everyone has resistance in the past. Also, local resistance works and local groups, which, you know, speaking here in your group is really powerful presentation of different local groups. So I would invite people to join a local group about migrant rights, prisoners' rights, disability justice, just learning and unlearning while you are doing a very simple thing that you can just support a group in one particular way.
Yeah.
And yes, we're all complicit, but you listen to the most impacted and find direction in action together. So just the idea, there are so many groups in Montreal that are doing lovely things, but getting people together to talk to one another about things, getting abolition movements to work with immigrant right movements, criminalization across borders, and working with people on the ground is important, but also having a sense of solidarity between groups can help when you have times where we need to have a sense of gathering and a sense of pushing back together. We can support each other in ways, and I know we often need to work with people who understand things so we can get the work done on the ground, but also having times where we gather together and connect these things in powerful ways, I think it can help to have solidarity around areas of resisting the violence which we're starting to find increasing around the world. The violence, really, the criminalizing of people needs to just be completely pulled apart. The idea you can just say you're a terrorist and therefore you have no, you're just dehumanizing of people for being Palestinian, for speaking about Palestinian rights, the dehumanizing of Indigenous people who say there shouldn't be a pipeline running through our land, the dehumanizing to a point where people can be imprisoned, killed. The violence we're seeing now has to really just be, well, who is being criminalized? And we can clearly see who the actual criminals, the serial killers are the people who are stopping the healthcare from coming to people, the people who are actually committing a genocide. So this questioning of the language of terrorism, of criminalization on a really strong level, and solidarity between groups. But I think it's wonderful what the groups are doing, and I'm excited, and I understand people need to get the work done. It's not just talk. It takes energy to get things done, and sometimes you just have to go onto the streets, say to people, what do you need, and then work for housing rights and just do that. Or work with prisoners and say, what solidarity do you need? Sure. How do we work with you and just do the work?
Well, I'm thinking also about like how, for me, and I think you might relate to this, Damaris, maybe, there's like a very like artistic aspect to activism, right? Like just in the sense that like making that decision to try to organize something improvised in a sense, like a small protest, right? Like there's so much improvisation and like kind of just on a very like geographical level, like how are we going to deal with the city space? The city's not really intended or planned out necessarily for a protest, right? And then there's like the people are there trying to figure out their chance together, which direction are we going to go, you know? And in the same way, like for me, like these small zine projects, they're not really officialized, right? Like they're just like ways to have a conversation and provoke hopefully other conversations. So in a way, like people often sort of think of art and activism as sort of two spheres, but the energy or sort of like the thinking on your feet improvisation seems for me very connected.
I said to one of my friends, I've been taking in a lot of information about Palestine, and I said to one of my friends, the things that touched me most was the poetry. Because I can receive information which can be quite traumatizing and challenging to receive, but when I read or hear a poem written, suddenly there's this huge feeling of heart and love blooming and people's lives, just this incredible resilience and persistence of humans. And you were saying, like, the protests are theater. They are like the mushrooms that appear out of the mycorrhizal web of resistance. They are just like, well, here we are, and we're still here, and we have drums, and we kind of have puppets. And you say this does nothing for us. This is just like the mushroom that bursts forth out of the expression of what we're doing. We're going to take to the streets. And you've seen the sort of Palestine every single weekend, one or two protests, along with all of the amazing fundraising, gathering information from the Palestinian Youth Montreal for Palestine, all these other groups. Incredibly strong, lovely artistic expressions of people gathering together, being physically with other people, and just walking down the streets for a couple of hours. We're here every week, 16 months, every week.
Damaris, thank you for this conversation. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Stefan. Thank you.
Thanks.
That was a conversation with Damaris Baker, who is an artist and community organizer based in Montreal, reflecting on the Voices Beyond Lockdown zine publication of Free City Radio. It was really a pleasure to speak with Damaris for this project. And this has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph, and we broadcast weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m., on CJLO 1690 AM, also in Montreal, on Wednesdays at 8 AM. On CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 AM. On CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 AM. On CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 AM. On Met Radio, 1280 AM in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 AM. On CKCU, 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 PM. And on CGSF, 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Thursdays at 4:30 PM. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast. Just look us up, search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks for tuning in, and I will be back next week.